Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stage Right, the show that looks at the lack of conservative voices in theater and asks, why? With your host, Rocky Benisher.
A very good friend of mine suggested that we change this music to Stryker, the Christian hard rock band, who I think got arrested once for showing up with a cross and suit of armor at a Metallica concert. Imagine finding a reason to get arrested at a Metallica concert. Anyway, thank you for the suggestion, dear friend of mine. But we'll try something else. Hey, this is Rocky Benisher, and welcome to Stage Right, the weekly show that says to conservatives, get off of that thing! And start making your voice, woo! People must have thought that was James Brown coming back from the dead. People are going to, whatever people think, conservative voices need to get up off of that thing and make themselves known on the stage and in the arts in general, but particularly for us on the stage. We're here every Sunday afternoon at 1:30 till 2 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to call in and say hi, ask some questions, or just tell us what you're thinking, our number is 347-884-9659. That number is 347-884-9659. Or if you want to write into us, we're at Stage Right Audio 1. That's all one word. Stage Right Audio and the letter, the notes, not a letter, it's a number. It's a number 1. I need core, the common core here. StageRightAudio1@gmail.com. StageRightAudio1@gmail.com. Hey, I want to remind you that we are sponsored by our good friends at Xander Business Group. Xander provides social media monitoring and online risk assessments for your child's online presence. Folks, parents, do you know what your children are doing on the internet? Do you know what they're doing on Facebook? Do you know what they're doing on Instagram, Pinterest? Twitter, do you know any of that? Well, maybe you should if you have a child who's underage. Maybe you should know, because did you hear that recent thing? I'm not blaming the social media for this, but where this 18-year-old kid fell in love with a girl who advertised herself as being 18, and she turned out to be 13, and then they went on a crime spree. They got caught in Florida today, so that's good. But parents need to know. For goodness sakes, if my mother knew what I was doing on Blog Talk Radio, she would be ashamed. But the internet never forgets, folks, and it's even more important for parents to take a proactive role in protecting their child's safety as well as online reputation. So I want you to contact Xander Business Group, and they can be reached at 760-865-9614. That's 760-865-9614. Or you can email info, I-N-F-O, at Xander Business Group. It's all one word, and it starts with an X. X. They are X-rated. No, I shouldn't say that. Info at XanderBusinessGroup.com. Hey, we got a new piece of equipment today on Stage Right. We are moving up, and we are somewhere in the age of Marconi. But we are moving on up. We got a pop filter. Yes, I've been told that whenever I said peas, I was popping all over the place. So now I've got a pop filter. So watch this. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickle pepper, pickle pickle pepper, peter pepper. Okay. Next one, we'll invest in a cough button. All right. We've had two exciting shows in a row. We've had, 2 weeks ago, we had C.J. Ehrlich on. We're still going to talk about C.J., an excellent playwright who was featured in the Republican Theater Festival of 2012. Last week we interviewed, and I hope you were with us, we interviewed Walt Vail. And Walt had some great things to say about theater, about his history and writing. Walt Vail, all of 87 years young, and hopefully he has many, many more years of great playwriting to go. But Walt said something last week that made me pause. Just like this. And that was the pause. He was talking about a conservative worldview, and he believed that he had one. And one of the things he said was that he stands on the shoulders of the great playwrights before him, the Sophocleses, you know, the Greeks, William Shakespeare, what's his name? Shakespeare? You know, that guy. Yeah, wrote a lot of plays. Not a lot of stage directions, though. Yeah, William Shakespeare, Molière, etc. And I would hope he would include, you know, some of the great American writers like O'Neill and Williams and Miller in there. And, of course, David Mamet, who we've got to talk about on this show because he came out of the closet. And he's a conservative. Oh, my God. What will this world come to? No wonder he's hated. But at any rate, so I got to thinking, which in itself is a rarity, but I got to thinking that, you know, studying literature, any kind of literature, can be a very conservative thing to do. And what do I mean by that?
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Well, I'll tell you what I mean by that. Is that I think that if we are studying literature, dramatic literature, we'll stick with that, then we are being conservative. And here's why. Because when we study the past, when we study the great writers, the great thoughts, see, people do have, people do have great thoughts. There were great writers down through the ages. When we study these things, and study them to show how important they still are, how they speak to us even today, how we can learn from them. You know, it is wise, I think, to continue to teach Sophocles' Oedipus Rex, and along with that, Aristotle's Poetics, because not only does Aristotle hearken to the Sophocles play, which Sophocles had been had passed away some 50 years before Aristotle wrote the Poetics. But he speaks about them and talks about their the play's importance. Aristotle speaks about Oedipus Rex and talks about its importance in terms of universal themes. So in a, if you will, pre-relative world, these universal themes have meaning, have importance. If we bring that meaning and importance forward and say that these plays speak to us today, the way we say Shakespeare speaks to us today, then aren't we being very, very baseline conservative? If you look back at some of the things that Russell Kirk said, and we talked about in the early days of this show, and we talked about some of the principles that Russell Kirk espoused, and as they were put together by an author named Russello, which had his first name, but we know Russello's right. And Russell Kirk talked about a faith in custom, convention, and prescription. By that, he didn't mean your Viagra. He meant what has come before us informs us today. We must, and we cannot abandon that because it informs us today and we can learn from it. We, that's the prescription. We ignore these past important works, these thoughts, we ignore them at our peril, folks. Also, Kirk talked about the recognition that innovation must be tied to existing traditions and customs. So when you have people of any political stripe learning from the past, the customs of the past, when we still say we've got to pay attention to Sophocles and Euripides and Shakespeare and Molière and all those who set a standard for us to draw upon, we are being very, very conservative. My feeling is that when you come upon those courses in college that study these things, that's a conservative endeavor. Now, progressive professors out there who have now heard this are scrambling to the rooftops to jump because they don't want to be connected to anything that's conservative. You know, Walt and I talked about the Constitution. We talked about strict interpretation of the Constitution or the quote-unquote living document that is our Constitution. More or less, the conservatives are going to be, I believe, on the side of a more strict interpretation. So why we are holding our heads in dismay these days is because of the many ways that the Constitution is being breached by the executive branch of this country. But the progressives believe that it is a living document, in which case they want to toss away parts that they don't like, keep the parts that they do, shift them, change them, and you know. So we're at a very big crossroads here. And I think it goes to the heart of conservatism being one that respects tradition. If you build upon the past, learning from it, acknowledging it, you will always be conservative. If you start to dismiss it, if you ignore it, if you break with it without due respect, if you delegitimize the past, then you are not conservative. So one way to look at the whole issue of conservatives in theater is, what is their relationship to the past? What is their relationship to that which went before them, and not just the past because it happened yesterday, but the things that have informed the present day, the things that we have built our institutions on? What is the writer's relationship to those things? And even the most left-wing writer, it's almost a redundancy there, but the most left-wing writer can be very conservative unless he or she is looking to destroy the past, dismiss it, say it never happened, okay? I'm not sure that our friend Karl Marx was reverent to the past. He wanted to overturn it, didn't he? Because it didn't, to him, work. So just some meditations. If you have any thoughts on this, I'd be happy to hear what you had to say. 347-884-9659. Give me a call and tell me if you think I'm way off, if you think that those people who talk about the dead white guys have very little reverence for the past, want to rewrite it. Our institutions are what they are for a reason. They have carried us through for a reason. We must preserve them. That makes us conservatives. Now we have to write about it. Okay. So did Walt and CJ write about this kind of thing? Well, let's go back to Walt for a few minutes, and then I'd like to get to CJ. Walt's play was Downsizing the Undercoat Man. And Walt's play, for those who missed it last week, is a discussion, if you will, between two people, Sam and Horace. Not Horace, but Horace. Although, as ex-New Yorker, I should say Horace. But I don't like that. No, I shouldn't. I'd say Horace. Wait a minute. What am I talking about? That's right. It's you crazy people outside of New York who say things like orange and Florida. Give me a break. It's Horace and Sam. Anyway, Sam is a guy who was hired to downsize the Fad Motor Company. And Horace is a longtime employee. And they have a discussion, a little back and forth, a little witty banter about what Sam's ultimate objective is, and that is to downsize Horace. And it turns out that this is not just a management issue where the employee is, you know, unfortunately but randomly chosen to be downsized. This is really a revenge tactic on the part of Sam because he bought a car from Fad Motor, and it turns out that the car rusted out. And at one time, Horace was in charge or part of the line that undercoated these cars. And it turns out that management and the union were complicit in planning the obsolescence My God, I'm using lots of big words today. Planning the obsolescence of the fad motor cars. Why? Because more people would buy them, not every 10 years, but every 3 years, because they rusted out. So the play argues that both the management and the unions are complicit. And Walt, I know that you have said to me, I believe in email, that the fact that the union is complicit in this is a conservative theme. Well, I would say it is very true that conservatives generally feel that the purpose and usefulness of unions has long since passed, and now they are more an obstacle to getting business done and treating workers fairly than they were back in the day when they were actually needed to correct some unfair working conditions. But the fact that you've got management also complicit in this doesn't, in my mind, make this a conservative piece, more or less. I think what we're doing here, by considering this a conservative piece, is highlighting or focusing on just that one element that the union was complicit. But it's very clearly stated here that management wanted it too. So giving you a speech, a little piece from the play, Horace Sam says about this policy to get people to plan the obsolescence of the car. Sam says, a policy, I suppose, provided by management, to which Horace says, management? No, too stupid. That's union policy. That's grassroots, right from the guys on the line. Sam says, oh, you're saying the guys on the line never wanted to dip and bake, right? They wanted rust? Damn right. You know, I'm getting better and better at this acting game. What am I going to do when it's three parts I got to juggle? CJ told me in the email that I was really good. Thank you. Sam later says, and the inspectors, they also wanted rust? Horace says, they sure did. But they work for management. No difference. One job needs another. I get the point. I understand. I'm outraged. And by the way, Walt said on the air that this was a kind of a true story for him years ago, that he bought a car that was unfortunately poorly rust-coated on purpose. But if management and union are in cahoots, then to me that's not a conservative theme. That is just an unfortunate theme of bad apples all around. I think what was going on here at the Republican Theater Festival, and I can't wait to talk to Kara Bluen, the founder. And yes, we will get her on. We're working out a date now. We're going to have to pre-record it. She's not available on Sundays. She said to me, never on a Sunday. When I got her out of the lemon tree, she said that any weeknight was good, so we'll pre-record that first. But I'd like to ask her about this in particular. What made something like this conservative to her? Okay. Now, CJ Ehrlich, on the other hand, and her play Spare Some Change, which we started a couple of weeks ago, that's at the end of that conversation, and that is a conversation between Scott and Diane. Little ditty about Scott and Diane. No. I don't think it was Scott, was it? I don't remember what it was. Anyway. Oh, you hear my birds back there singing? Yes, beautiful. Very beautiful. We record from the zoo here, in case you were wondering. Scott and Diane. Diane is a banker, a financier in the middle of a big city. Scott's sitting on the corner watching all the girls go by. No. Scott is sitting on the corner, and he is trying to solicit her to give him some money. And she kind of argues back and forth, and they kind of banter together. And we read a bunch of the stuff last week. Read a bunch of it last week where Scott accuses Diane of, you know, having fancy shoes and therefore and a fancy way of dress, and she carries herself a certain way, and therefore she must be, of course, a Republican. which, you know, is a common misconception, that Republicans all dress to the nines and conservatives are out there with their blue collar, and liberals are out there with their blue collars, you know, trudging away under the heavy weight of rich people who employ them. Of course, this is probably not true, and I venture to say that there are many, many very well-dressed liberals out there. Are you listening to me, John Edwards, John Kerry, Barbara Boxer, Nancy Pelosi, shall I go on, David Rockefeller, okay. Lots of very rich, rich left-wingers there. But don't you understand, folks, they got their money somehow legitimately, marrying a ketchup heiress, for example. They got their money very, very legitimately, whereas any rich Republican, like the Koch brothers, they have done it by exploiting the worker, the exploitation of the proletariat. That's how they've done it. But people like Warren Buffett, all very honest, while not paying his secretary a living wage, but complaining about it, right, that we need to do that. Okay. Anyway, off my soapbox now. So let's go back to toward the end of C.J. Ehrlich's play, Spare Some Change, Diane says, talking about Scott, who says he's living through the American nightmare. He says, the American nightmare, man, it's already run me down. Worst economy since the Great Depression. Guns all over the streets, lobbyists running Washington, and global warming. You've blamed everyone but the Tooth Fairy. Well, how about you? You a burger flipper? I'm a financial consultant. Sorry, you couldn't get hired as a raper or a pillager? So, bankers are evil? Of course not. Give Lance the trophy back, huh? My bank, this is Diane speaking now, folks. My bank hires admins, programmers, cooks, not to mention the cash we spend in these shops. We all pay taxes, we give out grants to charities and museums and shelters. I'm tired of being called evil because I want to provide for my family. It's all relative. Relative? I grew up with nothing. My dad's partner stole everything. We lived on dented cans and clothes from Goodwill. I worked my way through college, waitressing, tending bar. Those are the glamour jobs. Saved my pennies, bought only what I could afford. Here I am after 15 years of hard work. All right, so, CJ, that is a very, very conservative point of view. The only thing that gets me, the only thing that gets me with that is that speech about growing up with nothing. I was waiting for Diane to say, and I walked to school 10 miles uphill both ways without shoes. It becomes pat. No, it's Diane. No. It becomes pat when we have to defend the conservative views by showing our credentials of going through the rough times, of living through the school of hard knocks. Then it becomes a passé thing, all right? Oh, of course. Let me tell you, you know, I remember I was ashamed of myself today, but I remember I was in a job and there was this very strong union presence. And I was in management and I had to go meet some union folks. And like the first thing I said to them was, And the first thing I said to them was, oh, my father was a shop steward. Oh, you know, I grew up in a union household. Why would I have to say these things? Why would I have to say that? So they like me better? I didn't want to go there and say what I really felt, which I'm opposed to what you're doing. And I think a lot of you are nudniks and stop blaming management for your laziness and things like that. But anyway, so that was, I think, the one speech in Spare Change that kind of bristled me a little bit, is that it was the cliche of the rich person who has to defend him or herself to, so the poor person will be legitimized, you know, will take him or her legitimately. We don't have anything to apologize for, and I am by no means anywhere near the economic status of a Diane here. But people who earn money, as Diane says, I am sick and tired of being called evil. We do work for our money. We work hard for the money. And we don't have to be ashamed of it. That's a conservative theme. We don't flaunt it. We don't go around and say, peel me a grape, Jeeves, which way to the Hampton Country Club? You know, we don't have to do that, but we don't have to hide in shame. And that's what conservatives do, folks. We hide in shame for our values. We hide in shame for making money. We hide in shame that we're not standing on the street corner holding up signs, because for some reason that may be more noble. Okay. And it continues, by the way. Scott says to her, you are so 1%, which is insulting. And Diane says, by the way, I volunteer in a food pantry and coach disabled kids when I'm not buying flat screen TVs. That's more of an apology. I'm sure all this is true, and maybe there's another way to say it. But we don't have to. We shouldn't have to. You know, we shouldn't have to. I would rather we go up to a liberal. I want to see the play where a liberal is asked, what do you do on a daily basis to help the downtrodden? What do you do on a daily basis to help the disenfranchised? Because the liberals feel they can go off on vacations to the Ritz-Carlton on some tropical island, but they are absolved of any fault, of any guilt, where it comes to the downtrodden. Can you imagine, by the way, how many meals would go to the downtrodden rather than paying for, this is a very tortured sentence coming out, how many meals that trip to the Ritz-Carlton could have paid for? But they feel that they don't have an obligation because they want the government to do it, and they want to sit back and blame us, the conservatives. Okay. I want to see that play. Maybe I'll write that play where the liberal is asked, what do you do? Tell me what you're doing. Stop looking at what I'm doing. What are you doing? I may be a closet, I may be conservative, but I may be a closet contributor to charity. Okay. Toward the end of the play, Diane says, listen, Scott, nobody can afford a frivolous investment in this economy. What returns can you offer me? Because he wants her to put up some money to support him. He's got this crazy business, a panhandling business, which I thought was a clever twist. If I could say it, CJ, you would be pleased. And Scott says, invest in me, not starving. And I'll look into job training or talk to that social worker again, because she convinces him that he started to be a drain on those who have by keeping his hand out and not pursuing better things. And Diane at the end says, call me when you're ready for some real change. Spare change when you're ready for real change. Well, we've, over 2 weeks, talked about C.J. Ehrlich, and we have, at least I have, come to the conclusion that this play strikes conservative themes. We've got it, folks. Our conservative theme play, Spare Some Change by C.J. Ehrlich. See if I can't get that put together and have it actually performed on this show. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, Ludmila Bolo. Ludmila Bolo is the author of a play that was produced by the Republican Theater Festival, and she will be on next week. So that is not a show to miss, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rocky Benisher, and I am wishing you the most lovely week. Thank you for listening to Stage Bright. Write me, call me when we're on the air. It's important that we get the conservative voice out there, ladies and gentlemen. So help me do that. But right now, we are exiting Stage Right.